CBS News, the U.S. Olympic Committee supports President Carter's call for the Summer Games to be moved out of Moscow. I'm Deborah Potter reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The committee voted unanimously to approve a request that the games be transferred, postponed, or canceled to protest the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. But the panel appeared to hedge on the question of supporting a boycott. Committee President Robert Kane says it hasn't come to that yet.
We're not finessing the issue. It's not timely at this time. And when it is timely, after the International Olympic Committee deliberates and decides on the issues proposed by President Carter, then we'll decide what we must do with it after that.
The IOC is scheduled to meet 2 weeks from now in Lake Placid, New York, the site of the Winter Games. But the head of the International Committee, Lord Kilanen, already has said that moving the Summer Olympics is out of the question. Canada says that if the Games can't be moved, it will support a boycott. Details from Rick Miller of News Radio Ottawa.
The decision was announced following a meeting between Prime Minister Joe Clark and representatives of the Canadian Olympic Association. Clark told reporters that Canada fully supports the move by President Carter to use the Games in pressuring Moscow to remove its troops from Afghanistan. The Prime Minister promised Canada would boycott the Games if the Soviet troops are not recalled by the 20th of February.
This nation has to continue its very strong position against an invasion by the Soviet Union of Afghanistan and the continuing disrespect for human rights that nation has shown.
Clark said it's still his ultimate hope that the troops will be withdrawn, but if not, he favors finding one or more alternate sites to hold the Summer Olympics. Rick Miller for CBS News, Ottawa.
More news after this.
How many cold tablets do you take a day? Two?
More.
Four?
More.
Six?
Yep.
A day?
Uh-huh.
And then more at night?
Right.
Why?
Well, they're new.
Take Contac. One capsule helps all your congestive symptoms up to 12 hours.
All day?
And all night while you sleep. That's the wonder of Contac.
Hey, you're the guys on TV.
Yeah, we're the guys on TV.
Take your Contac. Take it fast. Give your cold to Contac.
Take only as directed.
Surprise, surprise, right before your very eyes.
Oh, Mother, the sweater is terrific.
Surprise, surprise, it's the button on the side.
Don't worry, Grandma. My arms are gonna grow.
Reach out and touch someone. Reach out, call up and just say thank you.
Call before 8 in the morning and save 60% on out-of-state calls you dial yourself, except Alaska and Hawaii. It's the nicest way to say
thank you, thank you.
System.
Another earthquake in Northern California. Officials say that Saturday night's tremor was a bit stronger than the one that hit on Thursday. Some property damage reported in the San Francisco area. The roof collapsed at a supermarket, but no one was hurt. Senator Edward Kennedy was briefed at the State Department and the Pentagon on Saturday after canceling a campaign trip to New England. Phil Jones has a report.
The senator would only say that he had requested the session to discuss world affairs. Secretary of State Vance reported that the discussion dealt with the Afghanistan matter, Soviet-U.S. relations, and a general foreign policy review. Kennedy also got briefings from the Secretary of Defense and the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and from Central Intelligence Agency experts on the Soviet Union and the Arabian Peninsula. Kennedy said again that he has no intention of dropping out of the race and that he will use these briefings from top Carter administration officials to prepare for what Kennedy described as a thoughtful commentary to be delivered here in Washington Monday morning. Asked if the senator is worried about a backlash from any all-out attack on President Carter at this time, a Kennedy aide said, quote, "The senator doesn't care anymore. If he's going to lose, he might as well lose saying what he believes." Phil Jones, CBS News, Washington.
The field of Republican candidates for the presidential nomination may be getting smaller soon. Senator Robert Dole of Kansas says he'll decide within a few days if he's going to back out. Dole finished last in the recent Iowa caucuses with less than 3% of the vote. Now this.
Sinus flares up.
I'm clogged up. Headaches. My whole face hurts. Help.
Send for Sign-Off.
Sign-Off helps relieve your pain, helps clear congestion, ease sinus pressure and post-nasal drip. Sign-Off does it all.
Send for Sign Off.
And for the fastest known form of congestion relief, Sign Off Spray, S-I-N-E-O-F-F.
Sign Off.
The sinus medicines in the bright red box.
Is here.
For occasional use, only as directed. I'm Bruce Morton, CBS News. 17 CBS News correspondents are traveling with the presidential candidates to report to you regularly on the new Campaign 80 series, Monday through Friday, starting February 4th. Others of us are standing back a bit to get some perspective on all the action. Roger Mudd, Morton Dean, Ed Bradley, and I. So to learn how things are going for Carter, Kennedy, Reagan, Bush, and the rest, listen here for Campaign 80, starting February 4th on the CBS Radio Network.
The State Department is warning Vietnam and the Soviet Union to stay out of Thailand. A spokesman says there are signs of a heavy military buildup by Vietnamese-backed troops inside Cambodia near the Thai border. And reports say they're planning to attack refugee camps in the area. I'm Deborah Potter.
This is the latest in a series of special monthly broadcasts from CBS News on the CBS Radio Network. Newsmark for January. The American car. Detroit shifts down. Here is CBS News correspondent Mitchell Krause.
It's been rough sailing in Detroit. The bad news rolling in like a flood, sending chills through the whole country. Sales of cars made in the U.S. continuing to tumble. Nearly 200,000 of the people who make them laid off. Chrysler barely afloat on a raft of federal loan guarantees and still in danger. Ford losing $1 billion in North America last year. And even General Motors, the powerful giant of the industry, in the red on U.S. cars toward the end of last year. The state of Michigan forced to borrow from Washington to keep its unemployment money flowing. And many other states feeling the ripples of the U.S. auto slump. The recession may still be in the future for most of us, but for Detroit, the Motor City, it already feels like a depression. And nowhere is that mood of gloom more evident than in Hamtramck, an auto town entirely inside Detroit, where earlier this month the Chrysler Corporation closed down the town's main industrial plant, a Chrysler factory known as Dodge Main, where several thousand workers had been employed.
Feels awful.
I have a wife and four kids. It might be kind of rough.
I'm walking out just like I walked in here 27 years ago. I ain't got a dime.
I would say the past 15 years or 20 years, you could see the plant slowly dying.
What's the mood like in there?
Sad. Real sad. Well, if you had a family and you had a pretty good paycheck and you worked every day, and then all of a sudden, there's no paycheck. You still have the family, and you just don't know what you're going to do with yourself.
At the Hamtramck branch of the Michigan State Unemployment Service, hundreds of unemployed Chrysler workers often wait for 5 or 6 hours for a check and for word that there are no other jobs right now.
I have never seen so many people here before, but I've been here ever since before lunch. No, it's almost dinner time. And she wants me to get out of line to go over there and wait. And then she's going to tell me she don't know how long I'm going to wait. And my kids are out of school, out in the cold. And I'm supposed to sit here and wait indefinitely.
But the effects of the auto slowdown are not confined to the Hamtramck and Detroit areas. 2,000 workers at Ford's Pico Rivera plant in California are out. The plant was closed for good this month. Temporary closings have hit auto plants in a dozen other states. This is not an auto plant, but one of thousands of factories where parts for the auto industry are made. And when auto sales and production fall into a slump, the effects are severe for the parts makers and for others. 1 in 7 U.S. jobs is auto-related. Like jobs at tire companies, where 10% of workers in Akron, Ohio have been laid off. And at this plant, the Michigan Rivet Company near Detroit, where bolts and car door stops are manufactured. Company President Thomas Clark.
We have a battery of suppliers that supply goods and services to us also. And it goes down the scale from the big to the middle to the little to the minor to the all the way down the line. And it's a terrible chain effect. I don't think that a lot of people realize the impact, because what's happening here in Detroit may be affecting somebody out in Idaho or Utah or some tool company or some supplier company that supplies us with old punch pins or things like that out in the East Coast.
What happened? What sent auto sales spiraling downward? What changed so drastically in the industry that has come to symbolize the economic strength of the United States? Aren't Americans still in love with the car as they were when Dinah Shore was selling it 30 years ago?
Viva USA in your Chevrolet. America is asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA. America's the greatest land of all. On a highway or a road along a levee.
And in the 60s, when the emphasis was on speed and power. But those were the good old days of freewheeling driving, of unlimited horizons that gave birth to highways, motels, drive-in movies, and fast food restaurants, of Sunday drives in the country and vacations that fostered the mobility so prized by Americans. Before the gasoline shortage, the oil price spiral, and the cost of living squeeze. The Arab oil embargo of 1973 and the long wintertime gas lines back then should have served as a warning. But it was the gas lines of last summer and the arrival of the dollar plus gallon that kept many people away from auto showrooms. They stopped buying enough American cars to turn the auto industry topsy-turvy. And it wasn't just another of those periodic downturns. Ford Motor Company Vice President Ben Bidwell summarizes the difference from the vantage point of a company whose 1980 model sales have fallen the most.
You have a combination this time of a slowdown in the economy, compounded, of course, by an energy situation. And you have that in turn compounded by now an international crisis. This is much more complex. Much more, perhaps, emotional, psychological, and there are a lot of factors, I think, that are more out of our control this time than in the past.
And the view on the downturn from an auto industry analyst, Arvid Juppe.
When we come out of this recession, we'll be making smaller cars. The automobile may not be as important in American life as it has been in the past. And the automotive job, I think, is going to be a bit different. In the old days, young people wanted an automobile that wasn't a stone, that was big and powerful and so forth. Those days, the yearning may be there, but the law will be completely against it. So that the automobile will become more a utilitarian type of thing.
But Thomas Stout, vice president of American Motors, the one domestic car company that's managed to show sales gains during the past year, says, despite external factors, the American people still love their cars.
The American lifestyle is one of mobility. Everybody really would like to have their own wheels. They want the freedom that comes with the ability to go anywhere, virtually anytime.
And auto analyst Juppe on the passion for cars.
People have a kind of a love-hate relationship with it. The older people would kind of love to have the old kind of cars that they had, the comfortable big gas-guzzling monsters, and the young people would probably like the old power where they could move, and it was a fun thing. Now it's become if you have one of those things, you have a kind of a guilt complex because people will look at you and say, look at all the fuel he's using.
General Motors Executive Vice President Roger Smith doesn't think car size is the only issue.
I maintain that the American public doesn't want smaller cars. What they want is more fuel-efficient cars. It isn't just taking the old car and sawing it off. We need brand-new transmissions. And, of course, every time you do that, you want to make it better. So you start with a clean sheet of paper and go in there and design a new, more efficient transmission, a new, more efficient brake, smaller, lighter, everything.
Ford's Bidwell, who acknowledges his company misjudged the future by not planning a smaller car for this model year. He explains the timing problem.
We have attempted to project alternate scenarios with regard to gasoline availability, alternate scenarios with regard to fuel prices, alternate scenarios with regard to interruption of fuel supplies, alternate scenarios with regard to economic assumptions, gross national product, etc.
It isn't only time, it's also money, a lot of money, many billions of dollars, not only to develop cars to meet the public's demand for fuel economy, but also to meet government fuel emission and safety requirements, some of which auto executives like Roger Smith think are excessive and only add to the cost of the final product.
When we go into the new emission rules, we're going to add $324 to the cost of the average American car to get the most minute gain imaginable in emissions, and that's just not right. And that's very expensive.
For American Motors, with limited resources to invest, the current fuel standards, which require a big jump in miles per gallon next year, may be too stringent.
We need enough lead time to be able to meet these standards. And in some cases, we've been very inefficient because we've had to allocate almost all of our technical manpower and all of our investment resources into a mad dash to try to meet a standard that may or may not be a fixed target. We need some balance, for example, Mitchell, between the demands we're facing in cleaning up the environment and those that we're facing in trying to get more fuel efficient.
United Auto Workers President Douglas Frazier agrees with the government effort, but says it worries him.
The only known way to get the kind of mileage that's demanded by the legislation is what we call the downsizing of cars. And when you take 700, 800, 900,000 pounds out of a car, you're really building a new car. You're redesigning a new car. And you're engineering a new car, and that costs just massive amounts of money. And that's a problem that Chrysler obviously has. It's a problem that Ford is having and is going to continue to have. And in fact, don't be surprised if GM goes out and borrows money in another year or so. So I think all these factors together make for a very, very troubled industry.
The next voice you will hear will be that of Lee Iacocca, chairman of the Chrysler Corporation. But here, the former Ford executive is speaking directly to the American consumer through a series of radio and television commercials.
The Congress of the United States has passed the Chrysler Loan Guarantee Bill. The new Chrysler Corporation is in business to stay. Today, the new Chrysler Corporation is a company at the crossroads. We must build every car, every truck, as though our very survival depended on it. And we are. The new Chrysler Corporation must make it in the marketplace, against whatever odds. America has given the new Chrysler Corporation breathing space. Now watch us go.
Chrysler. Of all the American car companies, the one hurt most by the public shift to smaller cars. A shift accompanied by a period of indecision, during which people simply put off new car plans. Meanwhile, Chrysler slid toward bankruptcy, with an inventory of more than 100 days of unsold cars, compounded by the public loss of confidence in Chrysler. Here's Chrysler's VP, Garlow.
We suffered severely in November and December because of the uncertainty of the future of our corporation in the eyes of the public. And I think our number one job is to convince everyone throughout the country that we want to move forward and we want people to come into our showrooms and buy our cars with all the confidence in the world that Chrysler will be in business. The marketplace is changing constantly. I've never seen it change quite as fast as it's been doing, I'll say, over the last 6 or 8 months. And I think we have to adjust quickly, both in our marketing plans and as quickly as possible in our product plans.
UAW President Frazier, whose members have accepted what amounts to a pay freeze from Chrysler, he says fear has led to conciliation.
We settled without a strike for the first time since 1964. You know, we have 120,000 people laid off in the Big Three alone. And that causes great anxiety, not only for those people that are working, but for those people who are still working, because they always think, well, you know, I can be next. So I think the mood of the membership right now is one of concern and anxiety.
But aren't American car companies making some of the smaller, fuel-efficient cars the American public wants? They are at this General Motors assembly plant in North Tarrytown, New York, where workers assemble the downsized GM X-Body front-wheel drive cars sold under the Buick Skylark, Pontiac Phoenix, and Chevrolet Citation nameplates. And GM's Sheila Chamberlain said that's made all the difference in Tarrytown.
We increased our employment to about 4,200 from about 3,800. The people are putting out on a two-shift production basis, working full-time and overtime, over 1,000 cars a day. But again, it's funny, we can't build them fast enough.
That's the rub. Chevrolet dealers like Mike Mullaney in Westchester County, New York, though they still sell bigger cars, they have greater demand for the hard-to-get smaller models.
I think that whether someone is buying a new car or a bag of jelly beans, for that matter, at this point, they've become much more aware of value per dollar, and it's become much more important to us to have a service reputation, to have, you know, let's face it, the right cars at the right time.
And a sales manager for a nearby Ford dealership says it's hard for the public to get used to smaller cars, often costing more than big ones. Dwight McGurk.
The big thing is the money. All right, who wouldn't mind buying a smaller car? But the big gas guzzler isn't worth anything, and the small car prices are so out of sight now, it's tough for a lot of people.
At a Chrysler showroom, Morton Rothschild says changed driving habits have changed car selection.
It seems to me that people are using their cars less now than before, and because of that, they'll probably be able to keep the old cars longer, which is something to think about for the future.
And people out shopping for cars in the suburbs of New York City last weekend reflected that view.
I do fewer errands, and if I have to do errands, I make sure they're all in the same direction. I don't go back and forth. So I have curtailed my driving considerably.
Just do less, stop joyriding around, visiting everybody, you know, make it one trip instead of 16 different trips.
Before we turn the key, we have a composite of what we want to do, and we make a number of stops on the same trip, so that we just don't start the car like we used to do indiscriminately.
Oh, what a feeling to own a Toyota. Oh, what a feeling to drive.
Fasten your seatbelt. Datsun's new 200SX is here.
Gonna drive you like you've never been driven. Datsun, we are driven.
I couldn't find an American-made car that was available that gave me what I wanted, a smaller car, economical on gas. There just aren't too many American cars that are on the market that meet that. I wanted to buy an American car. I really did. There weren't any.
Imports. More than anything else, they've depressed the American auto industry. Last year, nearly one in four cars sold in the U.S. was made abroad in Japan or Europe, or assembled here by Volkswagen with a booming plant in western Pennsylvania, soon to be joined by Honda with an assembly plant in Ohio. Imports, especially Japanese ones, have caused havoc for the Detroit automakers. And where they can't beat them, they join them. For example, Ford imports Fiesta, Chrysler imports Colt and Champ, American Motors soon will distribute Renault in the U.S. But the surge toward imports, which a well-respected Los Angeles market research firm, J.D. Power, expects will accelerate toward 30% of total car sales by next year, means, if nothing else, a loss of jobs for American workers. UAW member Noel Levins of Newcastle, Indiana, says Japanese imports should be curbed.
If they're going to sell cars in this country, they should be made to build them in this country. They should be able to make the same sacrifices that Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler makes. If Toyota wants to sell in this country, let them bring a plant over here and hire American people and pay American wages, etc.
GM VP Roger Smith.
I don't think we're getting quite the fair shake we should on that Japanese market. I think that if the Japanese are going to be allowed to trade in the world markets, they've got to open up their home markets on a fair basis and let other people in.
Ford's Ben Bidwell.
All of us in the industry are beginning to be a little weary of the current one-sidedness in the flow between Japan and the United States.
But at Chrysler, which imports several models from Japan and uses German parts in others, the problem is more complex. especially since their Japanese supplier has threatened to open its own dealer chain in the U.S. Aside from not anticipating the demand for smaller cars because they had no way of knowing the extent of the oil crisis, American carmakers have never embraced the idea of promoting small cars. Industry analyst Arvid Juppe.
This idea of onward and upward and a bigger car, call it materialism, whatever. In the American economy, there's been this desire to upgrade, and we have had in the United States into the 1980s a very, very great and rapid improvement in the standard of living, so that the small car really didn't seem to fit into that kind of rapid growth.
But John DeLorean, a former GM executive who's now about to market his own sports car made in Ireland, says small cars don't pay.
Typically speaking, there's much less profit in a small car than there is in a large car. There's almost the same labor content in a small car there is in a large, and so the only direct savings are in material. And the material cost is a very small portion of the cost of a total automobile.
DeLorean says the delay by American car makers in moving towards small cars was also caused by apathy.
I call it the Oakland Raiders syndrome, where you've got a bunch of older guys who are winning games, and then all of a sudden it happens the next season that they just don't do it anymore, and that's because they got a year older and a step slower. I think the same thing happened, except from a product standpoint, it does happen in every big company. The tendency is always to get a little bit more out of the old design. And that's why most innovations in every industry come from newcomers, not from the big manufacturers.
With all the difficulties swirling about the American auto industry, what of the future? DeLorean, for one, sees some reason for optimism.
You know, you have about 130 million vehicles on the road today, and of which probably 10 or 12% are fuel efficient by today's standards. That means that over the near term, those cars will all be replaced by more fuel efficient vehicles, so that the potential for the industry in the short term, I think, is very, very good. Now, their job is to get that business as opposed to giving it to the Japanese and the Germans.
And at Chrysler, Gar Lowe is convinced the American companies can adapt to change and survive.
The industry's been through the ringer. The industry's still going through the ringer. As we try to make these massive changes within the industry to meet the marketplace.
Ben Bidwell of Ford says the road to survival may lead to the so-called world car.
Yeah, it's coming. Fundamentally, I think in the areas of powertrain, suspension, basic shell design. And what you will see probably will be a car that made in America may look different and may have quite a few different parts in it than the same car, for example, made in Germany or Japan, but major pieces of that car are in fact either common or identical.
General Motors says 1980 may be a better year for the car makers than many people expect. Roger Smith.
We seem to bent sometimes on this self-destruction kick that everything looks bad, but that's not true. We've got every reason to, in this country, to look forward with great things down the road.
But in the end, the American consumer will have the last say. And right now, at least, the watchwords are those of caution and cutback.
Yeah, I do much less driving now. I used to do a lot of running around. But I still do much less driving. I do a lot of walking. I guess I will think twice before I plan any long-range trips, but my primary concern is gas availability. I remember in the summer when I had to get up at 3 in the morning to stand online, and being the 95th car to get gas was a real problem. I don't see how we can continue going on with the situation as it is. I think everyone will have to be very flexible and have to give and take.
Everything's crazy. Got to end somewhere. Sooner or later, people can't go on.
You have been listening to Newsmark. This month's broadcast, The American Car, Detroit Shifts Down, with CBS News correspondent Mitchell Krause, was produced by Clarence Fanto. Additional interviews by CBS News correspondent Chris Kelly. Technical supervision by Steve Mendelson. This has been the latest in a series of special monthly broadcasts from CBS News.
CBS News. The backlash continues from the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. Muslim countries are working on a joint protest. I'm Deborah Potter reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The foreign ministers of 43 Islamic states are meeting in Pakistan today, and President Zia-ul-Haq opened the conference with a stern warning to Moscow. Get the troops out of Afghanistan, he said, or lose the trust and cooperation of the Muslim world. Some of the participants, including Iraq, Algeria, and Libya, have close ties to the Soviet Union, and they're expected to oppose any protest moves. But they're also expected to be outvoted. Sources say the conference may urge the member states to break off diplomatic relations with Moscow and impose economic sanctions. The ministers also may approve a call for a boycott of the Summer Olympics. In Colorado Springs yesterday, the U.S. Olympic Committee voted unanimously to support President Carter's proposal to transfer the games if possible. Details from Gary Shepard.
The executive board of the U.S. Olympic Committee met here all day long, then announced it is recommending to the International Olympic Committee that the 1980 Summer Games either be moved out of Moscow or not be held at all this year. Robert Kane, president of the U.S. Olympic Organization, admitted the plan is to buy time to avoid an outright boycott of the games. The U.S. team has until May 24th to formally enter the competition. Kane says the next move is up to the International Committee. American athletes will continue to train for the 1980 Summer Games, but Kane said it is his impression that if the International Committee refuses to move the games out of Moscow, the United States will not enter a team this year. Gary Shepard, CBS News, Colorado Springs.
More news after this.
24-hour holding power. Ezo denture cushions give you full-time protection all day, all night. They have no funny taste. They won't wash out. They won't catch stubborn scraps of food. They won't hurt you or embarrass you. So until you see your dentist, use Ezo, the temporary holding aid. A fitting choice to help keep those dentures in their place. That's Ezo, E-Z-O. 24-hour holding power.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jack Buck. Speaking for Hank Stram and CBS Radio Sports, we'll be on hand today at 4 o'clock Eastern Time from Aloha Stadium in Honolulu for the Pro Bowl game. We hope you'll tune us in 4 o'clock Eastern Time here on CBS Radio, the final football game of the year, the Pro Bowl, this afternoon.
That's the Pro Bowl, later today at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on most of these CBS Radio Network stations.
San Francisco shook again last night, the area hit by the second earthquake in 3 days. Officials say the latest tremor was a bit stronger than the one on Thursday, but again, there are no reports of injuries, and the quake caused only minor damage. U.S. officials say they're worried about reports of a military buildup inside Cambodia near the border with Thailand. Jacqueline Adams has details from Washington.
The State Department expressed concern about the safety of two large refugee encampments along the Thai-Cambodian border in light of recent large Vietnamese troop deployments in the area. Reports of an impending attack against the camps have come from a high-level defector from the Vietnamese-backed Cambodian government. The reports have been corroborated by an increase in radio propaganda broadcasts and the influx of some 50,000 extra Vietnamese troops into the area north of Oranjepet. According to State Department officials, the two camps pose a political threat to the Vietnamese, channeling rice from relief organizations into Cambodia. The Vietnamese are hoping to drive the 500,000 to 700,000 Cambodians in the camps into Thailand, thus diluting their political influence in Cambodia and placing an extra burden on the Thai government. The U.S. government also fears that military action along the border could spill over into Thailand, thus posing a serious threat to that country. Jacqueline Adams, CBS News at the State Department.
In South Korea, two army deserters are holding about 100 people hostage at a hotel in Seoul. Reports say the soldiers are armed with automatic rifles, that one policeman was killed in the takeover and two civilians wounded. Now this.
The holidays are over, and it's time to get back to business. So have a pencil ready for an important offer from the Wall Street Journal that will help you keep in touch as well as plan ahead in every phase of business. The Wall Street Journal recently took a look at what could lie ahead for gold, why the picture is not too encouraging for wage earners in 1980, and why the oil tax bill just might bring you a windfall. Other journal articles reported on how it may be possible to get 30% from a government bond and how the deaths of three teenagers a year and a half ago is bound to raise questions about automotive safety and product liability. If information like this is important to you, you should be reading the Wall Street Journal. It's all the business news you need when you need it. Right now, you can get 20 weeks of the journal, that's 100 copies, for just $26, a real money-saving offer. So in the continental U.S., call this toll-free number now, 800-228-2222. That's 800-228-2222, except in Nebraska. You'll be billed later.
The apparent winner of Iran's presidential election says the hostage situation is a minor affair that can easily be solved. Finance Minister Bani Sadr gave no details, but U.S. officials hope that his victory will mean progress to win the release of the Americans, now in their 85th day of captivity. I'm Deborah Potter, CBS News.
This is Spectrum on the CBS Radio Network. Personal opinion on issues of public interest from six different viewpoints. Now, one of those perspectives.
I'm Kevin Phillips. The results of the January 21st Iowa Republican caucuses have turned out to be a major embarrassment for the presidential hopes of Ronald Reagan. By losing to George Bush in Iowa, former California Governor Reagan has succeeded in focusing the attention of the nation on his vulnerability, on his political feet of clay, instead of on his inevitability. If one thing is clear now, it's that Reagan is no longer inevitable. But conservatives can no longer take his nomination for granted. No small part of the blame for Reagan's poor Iowa showing can be laid at the feet of his chief campaign strategist, John Sears. There are a lot of Republicans who feel Sears' strategy cost Reagan victory once before, in the critical early primaries of 1976 against Gerald Ford. And now Sears may have done it again, turning Reagan, an articulate, attractive politician, into a candidate who lost because he wouldn't debate. Because he was perceived as being aloof, as being above the need to discuss the issues with the people. It's quite possible that Ronald Reagan is already on his way to becoming another Thomas E. Dewey, the ultimate example of a presidential candidate defeated by his own smugness. But I hope not. I think it's important from the conservative standpoint that Reagan throw off the burden and albatross of John Sears, that he stop mouthing cliches about Republican unity, and start acting like a fighter. From the conservative standpoint, the stakes are certainly high enough. I know it's commonly said that George Bush, Reagan's new chief rival, is also a conservative and not very different in philosophy. But I think this is entirely misleading. In a recent article, pollster Lewis Harris said, and I quote, "Bush comes closest to inheriting the old Rockefeller vote within the Republican Party. That's the key. George Bush is the candidate of what could be called the Eastern Republican establishment. Sure, he may have had a solidly conservative voting record in the House of Representatives, but so did Gerald Ford. Yet the minute Ford was in the White House, he named Nelson Rockefeller vice president and turned to a number of top Rockefeller-type Republicans as his advisors. George Bush would probably do the same thing, tilt his administration towards the old-school tie Eastern establishment Republicans. As far as I'm concerned, that dubious prospect is a pretty good reason to hope Ronald Reagan gets his political act together, and soon. This is Kevin Phillips for Spectrum.
Monday through Saturday, Spectrum brings you differing informed viewpoints on various topics of public interest. Opinions not necessarily those of this station or the CBS Radio Network.